You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend, a weekend that you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't and it had to be done, you got it done, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we appreciate you. But I know you did it safely. You wore a mask. You kept your social distance. You washed your hands. You were very cautious because it's spiking in parts of this country and around the world, particularly in Europe and America, man. Not so much in Africa, South Africa, but not so much in Africa. But man, it's all over. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. And you'll see at the top of the page, podcast. Click on that, and then the drop-down will be African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., all times are going to give our Eastern times. Tonight, Monday, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad Ahmed, followed by, from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Cambon and her daughter, Nataki Cambon, followed by 9 p.m. from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey in Cobra. Tuesday from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Tuesdays from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, after 7, with host Shani B from 7 to 9 after 7. And on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters. That's right. It's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard from 8 until Saturday, 4 p.m. to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then at 7, from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council with host Alfonso Watkins. On Sunday at 7 p.m. in the evening, it is Time for an Awakening once again with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. It's the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. It's WeBuyBlack.com. Products that are produced by us. Africa for the Africans. I'm really proud and happy to announce this, that the trip that Brother Momani has going on is going to happen. That's right. They are leaving in a few days. The trip to Tanzania, November 20th through the 30th. $3,700 is going to happen. They are going, about 15 of them, and that's beautiful. In fact, he's going again next year in November 19th to the 29th. In fact, he said it's going to add a few more days to that trip. I'm going. I want to go to Tanzania. I have a whole year to prepare. Come join me. Going to Tanzania. And he had it scheduled for South Africa. But in our conversation, Tanzania for us is a lot better place. I really don't want to go to South Africa. Too many Caucasians. In fact, as I said to you, Caucasians still run South Africa like Caucasians still run Namibia or Southwest Africa. So, but I want to go to Tanzania and a few other places on the continent. So Africa for the Africans. Go to his website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, or give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. He's going to put on YouTube the video of Tanzania. And not just, you know, tourist sites, but all around. So I look forward to that, and I'll make that announcement, because if you want to see photos of Brother Bomani's previous tours, he's been doing it almost 15 years. That's right. Over 450 of our people. And go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, go to YouTube.com/Bomani 2007-2007. Africa for the Africans. Wow. That's fantastic, Brother Bomani. Fantastic. Brother Rinoco Rashidi, go to drrinoco.com, drrinoco.com. And he has a trip coming up. It's been changed from the dates it were, because it was January to February. Now it is October 5th through the 16th, Uganda and Rwanda. Another place I'd definitely like to go to. His trip for August 1st through the 14th, the Kemet is still on. August 1st through the 14th to go into Kemet is still happening. But the one was changed from January 21st to November 4th to going to Uganda and Rwanda. And go to his website, drrinoco.com. Habesha Incorporated. HabeshaIncorporated.org. The brothers and sisters are doing the work. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org and be a part of and donate to the Kashi Project, which is the building a village in Africa. The groundwork is being laid. You go online, you'll see all the activity that HabeshaIncorporated.org is doing. HabeshaIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group. I had the members of the Ledge Group, Brother Nkosi and Brother Peter Brown, on the program this past Friday, and I hope that you enjoyed it. I mean, just fantastic what the Ledge Group is doing. You can go to Facebook and put in the Grand Rising. The Grand Rising, and that information will lead you to be a part of what's happening with the Ledge Group. But go to theledgegroup.com, theledgegroup.com, and just see what they're dealing with and what they're doing. Of course, it has to deal with the elements that we deal with. That's right. Providing food, shelter, and clothing, and water. The great projects that they got going on throughout Africa. A lot of work in Tanzania. In other words, why I want to go to Tanzania. A lot of work. So, brothers and sisters, these organizations are doing the work and deserve to be supported. If you know, I know that the European Jews around the world support Israel. They don't support Israel with a clenched fist and yeah, right on. No, they support Israel with money, resources. This country, Israel is a pimp. And America is its hoe. Because Israel gets billions of dollars, more than any place, any country on the planet. And those are tax dollars, our dollars. But what I'm saying here, though, is that we should be and do just like what the Europeans, Jews, are doing and sending money to Africa and develop Africa. Now, I know we ain't sending it to somebody who's a despot, who's a, you know, neo-colonialist. No, I'm saying send money to the organizations that are doing the work, that are straight and above board and doing the work to help our people developing the land and so forth. Okay. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar was at Wadada's this past weekend, and had a great time, great company, and was really, really good. You know, good juices and smoothies and atmosphere. And we were talking about how the place has really grown, you know. And so Wadada's will be there. They've established themselves. They're doing well. Even though they did have some other organizations within there at one time, but no, they're running their stuff. I love it. They even have Caribbean vegan food on weekends, on Saturday and Sunday at Wadada's. So Wadada's, Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End, right across the street from the Soul Veg, up the street from Shrine of the Black Madonna, and up the street from the West End Mall. Wadada's, Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Give them a call at 404-444-1635, 404-444-1635. Mama Nia, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Go check out Mama Nia or give her a call at 404-346-3263. And if you're seeking a book and she doesn't have it, believe me, she will get it. But you have a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, figurines, all kind of good stuff right there in the Greenbrier Mall, right near the food court, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. Give Brother Gazimde Ajamu a call at 404-519-8107. Same thing applies. If you're looking for a book and you're in that area and he doesn't have it, he'll get it for you. There is light in the Black Dot family. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. He also has a coffee bar now and pastries and so forth. Beautiful. Making it happen, y'all. Making it happen. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night, 9 p.m. to 10 on Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The program is called Dare to Win. That's us lifting us. Every Thursday night, the Thursday night broadcast. Or you can give a call and you can listen, or you can ask questions or comments or concerns at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. That's us lifting us, the economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Sanjay Dash Haiti. Sister Gabrielle Aurelia, who is doing outstanding work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Give her a call at, excuse me, don't give her a call. Go online to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay dash Haiti. They deal with the education of those children. They deal with the health. They deal with entrepreneurship. Sustainable agriculture. They're doing beautiful work. Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I .org. That's how you're supposed to pronounce. It ain't supposed to be Haiti. It's supposed to be Haiti. You know, I got that from folks who live in Haiti. Akabin Institute. Brothers and sisters, we must support Brother Baba Baruti and his lovely wife, Yah Baruti, who are doing outstanding educational work for our young, for our youngsters. Please send them a donation at Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786. Or you can go to Cash App or PayPal. Now, I've been mentioning the programs that they have that are now virtual, and they sometimes use the Cash App one or the PayPal one, But if you want to use Cash App, the $YAA, the letter MBARUTI, and make your donations, ongoing donations, greatly appreciated. Also, too, I'm going to talk about Kibuka in a minute, but first I'm going to talk about Abakasin Sumsum, because why? It is this Sunday, November 15th. Abakasin Sumsum, African Spiritual Warfare. Mama Remember Ani, she's been doing this. It's her 17th annual. It's going to be held Sunday, November 15th, 12:30 to 6:30 at the Sweetwater State Park, located in Lithia Springs, Georgia. Sweetwater State Park, 1750 Mount Vernon Road in Lithia Springs, Georgia, 30122. And if you got any questions, give me a call at 414-324-5796, 414-324-5796. That's Abakasin Sumsum, African Spiritual Warfare, Race First, African's Ancestral War Plan. So check it out this Sunday. Also, too, Kibuka, remembering the middle passage, the Ma'afa, the great tragedy, remembering the middle passage through the eyes of our ancestors. Kibuka, very emotional. And I'm interesting to see how this is going to be done on, because, I mean, I've been to the Kibuka since I've been here, and it's always very emotional, very deep. Kibuka, remembering, that's going to be February 21st, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. And donations are $20 for a family, $15 for a couple, $10 for adults, and $5 for children. And, of course, include your pertinent information, which, of course, is Kibuka, your name, your email address, so they can send you the streaming link so you can check out the Kibuka. Okay. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesim. November 8th. A person who is ever ready for war is never defeated, an African proverb. Interestingly, some Africans claim to be warriors are not quite sure that we are at war. They hedge on certainty because in their minds, there is not ample evidence before them that at this particular moment, even though they are fully conscious of our enemy's consistent historical record of genocide against us, they sit waiting for a new, defined, observable sign, presumably from the heavens or sneaking up on their back door in full armor with safeties off. They wait foolishly in fear and taking the first or any step. However, others of us are clear. We know, we are certain. We need no additional proof of the onslaught. We need no more litanies. The senseless, unprovoked, vicious murder of one African was enough evidence. Therefore, the conversation was over centuries ago. None of what they have to offer, the treasonous smiles, the worthless trinkets, the whitewashed degrees, lying media, nothing. Nothing they could possibly offer would cause us to question their genocidal intent. We know them. We have no friends among our enemies, only sources of information, if that. Nothing changes from us being in a state of war and readiness short of our return to power. And even then, readiness will be with us forever. We are ever ready, always in a state of preparedness, survival bag ready, battle gear in hand. We will never be caught off guard again. Affirm, I am ready. Affirm, I am ready. November 9th. Intellectual disobedience is the ultimate act of decolonization. Moreover, it is the hallmark of a liberated mind. Uhuru Hotep. We must shield our children from the intellectual insanity of others, their psychosis. However, to teach, we must know who we are and what our children must equip themselves to do. Becoming African-centered thinkers require that we reconceptualize our reality in African terms and ways of knowing and doing. Has a function of correcting definitions and defining, incorporating, and acting as Africans, our reality naturally changes. Power shifts and balance returns. It is a process of visualization and activation. Because we think so, it becomes so. Reconceptualization is the process of searching out and or creating more appropriate terms and especially meanings to terms that better fit the logically self-interest, nation-building politics of our research and agenda. The true purpose of study is to teach the student about his or her power. Acceptance with one power is the only means by which an individual can determine and fulfill his or her own destiny. And if individuals forming a nation do not know and cannot act on their power, the power of their people's cultural assembly, the power of their culture, the power manifest in them through their ancestors, then they do not constitute a nation. It is only an aggregation of powerlessness, dissociated individuals easily victimized by other nations on a mission of exploitation and domination. Affirm. I am reconceptualizing our reality in African terms. Affirm, I am reconceptualizing our reality in African terms. Ashe. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Oh, sorry about that. I'm trying to find something. And here it is. Kwame Nkrumah said, I believe strongly, this is the speech of freedom in 1961. This is 4 years after Ghana became the first African country to gain its independence from the colonizers. I believe strongly and sincerely and with deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government will emerge, not as just another world block to flaunt its wealth and strength, but has a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on the fear, envy, and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and dedicated to the good of all mankind. Kwame Nkrumah. Then he said this some years later. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore. Marimba Ani. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect that the European has had on our ability to think victorious. We must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts so that we may visualize a future that is not dominated by Europeans. This is a demand by an African-centered view because we are Africans and because the future which Europeans leads us is genocide. Ashe. That's why it's important. That is about the mind. It is about the mind, brothers and sisters. Today is the birthday of two people in our history, two people that are dynamic in our history. Benjamin Banneker. Benjamin Banneker was born on this day in 17. Let me pull that up.
So I'm going to read a little bit of that. You know, let's go read just a little bit. Benjamin Banneker was born November 9th, 1731. He passed October 9th, 1806. You know that J.A. Rogers used to have books on history, and he had these illustrations, you know, and they pull one here on Benjamin Banneker, and they show him at 22 using a borrowed watch as a model and a pocket knife as his only tool. He constructed the first clock made in America. It kept accurate time for over 20 years. Here he shows him surveying. On the advice of Thomas Jefferson, he was placed on a commission which surveyed land and laid out the city of Washington, D.C. And then they show him planning for peace in the time of war, advocated by Banneker in his famous almanac. He had a series of almanacs for about 5 years in 1731. Benjamin Banneker. Also, the birth date of George G.M. I'm going to read about Banneker in a minute. George G.M. James. He was born November 9th, 1893. And he passed June 30th, 1954. George G.M. James wrote the book Stolen Legacy. He worked at a black college, HCBU, and he wrote this book around the 1954. That was the same, you know, that 54 was the same year of Emmett Till being killed in Money, Mississippi, being murdered brutally. It's also, months later, there's the boycott, the Montgomery bus boycott, and the Supreme Court decision of Brown versus Board of Education in Topeka, Kansas. So 54, and he was murdered, I believe, and his death under mysterious circumstances is being looked at again from based upon the article that I read. But all of the articles are a few years old. But yeah, George G.M. James, George Granville Mariah James, Stolen Legacy. You know, there are people in our history like him, Dr. Jopp, Dr. Clark, many of these warrior scholars that we owe a debt of gratitude because these brothers and sisters labored many times without foundation money or grant money and a tremendous sacrifice, but for the love of us as a people and wanting to make sure that we understood what was out there against us and understood that history and how important it is. So get the book, Stolen Legacy, George G.M. James. He talks about how the Greeks stole. Yeah, but I've been saying that here on this program. So if you've been listening to this program, then you will know that they stole. They plagiarized. That's right. They appropriated because they're thieves. They're cultural bandits. Benjamin Banneker, November 9th, 1731 to October 9th, 1806, was a famous mathematician, inventor, and abolitionist in the early days of the U.S. He was born to a family of mixed race. His grandmother, Molly Wash, was a European, an English woman, and a former indentured servant. Remember, they had indentured servants. First ones who arrived here were indentured servants, Europeans. And based upon the history, they said there were some African indentured servants, but basically most Africans came here forcefully. Banneker's grandfather was a former enslaved West African royal named Banneker. The two violated Maryland law and got married. Mary was of a mixed race, and she went on to marry a newly freed African man named Robert, who took Banneker as his surname upon their marriage, according to the information. Banneker was taught to read by his maternal grandmother, and for a very short time attended a small Quaker school. His grandmother, Molly, served as his primary educator and taught him how to read. She also sparked an interest in math and science. I gotta wait, you know, I gotta turn the pages here. Sometimes, you know, these computers would be acting whack. At 22, Banner took one look at a functioning pocket watch and created a striking clock from wood. The clock was so well crafted that it ran up to 20 years without power, without a power source. Many historians believe that Banneker's clock is the first one made entirely in the USA. His relationships with the Ellicotts. The Ellicotts were a group of business owners that built mills in the 1700s, in the 1770s, around Maryland. Banneker was befriended by the family, and the relationship had a great impact on his life. In 1788, Banneker used books and tools from his family to accurately predict the time of a solar eclipse. This event made him famous and brought him some local fame. Don't do that. I'm sorry. Okay. His relationships with Ellicott became even more beneficial in cementing his legacy when he was selected to survey the new federal city that would become Washington, D.C. in 1791. Andrew Ellicott recruited Banneker to help with his task. At the time, there was an uproar about having an African man do this. According to the Georgetown Weekly Ledger, Ellicott was attended by Banneker, an Ethiopian, because you remember they used to call Africa, oh, Africa, Ethiopia, you know. So he attended with an Ethiopian whose ability as a surveyor and an astronomer clearly proved that Mr. Jefferson's concluding that race of men were void of mental endowments has with the, we remember Thomas Jefferson said, black people just, you know, all men are created equal. In fact, Banneker, considered a founding father of the U.S., Jefferson was famously known for espousing freedom and equality for mankind. Jefferson wrote many articles questioning slavery and introduced a bill to prohibit future importation of Africans into Virginia. But despite Jefferson's misgivings about the trade, he continued to believe in the moral and social superiority of Caucasians over Africans. In fact, he personally owned and sold over 700 of our people. Banneker knew this, and in August 19, 1791, penned a letter to the then Secretary of State denouncing Jefferson's hypocrisy about freedom for all men. In 1791, responded letter held by the Library of Congress, Jefferson would say, "Nobody wishes more adamantly to see a good system commenced for raising the conditions of Africans to what it ought to be." So Jefferson recommended Banneker for employment as an assistant surveyor of the new federal city. He praised Banneker to people like the Marquis Contador, that's the name, 1741 to 1794. He was the secretary of the Royal Academy of Science. However, later on in life, Jefferson recanted his praise for Banneker and caused his efforts and ceased his efforts at ending captivity. Bogus, ain't it? That's right. Come on now. There we go. Here we go. Benjamin Banneker's Almanac. From 1792 to 1797, 5 years, Banneker wrote and published a farmer's almanac that would serve as his platform on the abolition of captivity and provide many of his mathematical and scientific achievements for the public. He calculated the cycle of a 17-year locust and also published information on bees. You know, those got to watch out for them locusts, you know. In fact, they just had one in southeastern Africa. Yeah, really, really messed up all them crops and so forth. Just south of Ethiopia. Banneker lived to be 75. He was never married and never had children. By the end of his life, he was financially destitute and unable to bring in a steady income. So he sold parts of his farm and continued his scientific research. Banneker published 6 almanacs and 28 editions, leaving behind a legacy of African excellence. Benjamin Banneker. whose birthday it is today. It's good to know about people, isn't it? And makes you feel proud to know of who you are and what you have done. That's why I always say, you know, we have a serious legacy. Today we're going to talk about Africa. Oh, really? I'm shocked. No. In fact, what I'm talking about today is no laughing matter, because we're talking about the exploitation of Africa. You know. Yeah. The exploitation of Africa and the consistent ripping off of the resources of Africa. You know, and when I talk about Europeans coming into Africa, it bothers me tremendously. When I talk about the Chinese planning to place on the continent 300 million Chinese. So, you know, this is a TED Talk. Many of you probably have seen this. Sister Malence, Bert Williams from Sierra Leone. She's addressing a TED Talk in Berlin, Germany. And she's talking about Sierra Leone. It's about 17 minutes. So we're going to play this, and then we're going to take a break afterwards, and I'll come back to talk more about the exploitation of the continent and African people. This is Sister Malence.
Malence, and I come from the richest country in the world. It is located in the richest continent in the world, in the west of the richest continent. My country is called Sierra Leone. On the surface, we are blessed with infinite beauty and abundance of flora and fauna, producing the most exquisite harvest of coffee, cocoa, fruits, vegetables, and caoutchouc. You name it, we've got it. We also have diverse wildlife and vast marine resources. And waterfalls and rivers that run into the most beautiful beaches. The land is golden, literally, a true paradise. Which, of course, is inhabited by the most beautiful souls. We have a very strong cultural heritage. In fact, Sierra Leone had the first sub-Saharan university. Prior to that, there was one in the kingdom of Timbuktu, which was the first university in the world, succeeding the great Gnostic schools of Egypt and Osiris. On a deeper level, we are blessed with the real treasures the kings and queens of this world desire. This was the largest alluvial diamond ever found. It weighs almost 1,000 carats. 969 to be precise. This beauty was found by an old lady in her backyard about 2 years ago, 125 carats. Some people mine gold in their backyards. That's quite common. Besides gold and diamonds, we have about 20 precious minerals that have been discovered as of today. We recently started extracting huge petroleum reserves that have been discovered. We have platinum, ilmenite to make titanium, rutile to coat jets, iron ore, the largest iron ore deposits in Africa, the third largest in the world. Tantalite, also known as coltan, used in your mobile phones and computers, bauxite for aluminium production, zinc, chrome ore, copper, coal, phosphates, potassium, salt, lead, granite, asbestos, nickel, zircon. Furthermore, we have exquisite timber like mahogany, antique, and we have the most beautiful stamps in the world. Of course, the West needs Africa's resources most desperately to power airplanes, cell phones, computers, and engines. And the gold and diamonds, of course, a status symbol to determine their powers by the core and to give value to their currencies. One thing that keeps me puzzled, despite having studied finance and economics at the world's best universities, the following question remains unanswered. Why is it that 5,000 units of our currency is worth one unit of your currency, where we are the ones with the actual gold reserves? It's quite evident that the aid is in fact not coming from the West to Africa, but from Africa to the Western world. The Western world depends on Africa in every possible way, since alternative resources are scarce out here. So how does the West ensure that the free aid keeps coming? By systematically destabilizing the wealthiest African nations and their systems, and all that backed by huge PR campaigns, leaving the entire world under the impression that Africa is poor and dying and merely surviving on the mercy of the West. Well done, Oxfam, UNICEF, Red Cross, Life Aid, and all the other organizations that continuously run multi-million dollar advertisement campaigns depicting charity porn to sustain that image of Africa globally. Ad campaigns paid for by innocent people under the impression to help with their donations. While one hand gives under the flashing lights of cameras, the other takes in the shadows. We all know the dollar is worthless, while the euro is merely charged with German intellect and technology, and maybe some Italian pasta. How can one expect donations from nations that have so little? It's super sweet of you to come with your colored paper in exchange for our golden diamonds. But instead, you should come empty-handed, filled with integrity and honor. We want to share with you our wealth and invite you to share with us. The perception is that a healthy and thriving Africa would not disperse its resources as freely and cheaply, which is logical. Of course, it would instead sell its resources at world market prices, which in turn would destabilize and weaken Western economies established on the post-colonial free meal system. Last year, the IMF reports that 6 out of 10 of the world's fastest growing economies are in Africa, measured by their GDP growth. The French Treasury, for example, is receiving about $500 billion year in, year out, foreign exchange reserves from African countries based on colonial debt they forced them to pay. Former French President Jacques Chirac stated in an interview recently that we have to be honest and acknowledge that a big part of the money in our banks comes precisely from the exploitation of the African continent. In 2008, he stated that without Africa, France will slide down in the rank of a third world power. This is what happens in the human world, the world we have created. Have you ever wondered how things work in nature? One would assume that in evolution, the fittest survives. However, in nature, any species that is over-hunting, over-exploiting the resources they depend on as nourishment, natural selection would sooner or later take the predator out because it offsets the balance. Now that I shared my perspective with you, I would like to share my initiatives with you. As a Sierra Leonean, I'm a diamond expert. I find them in the rough. What nature created from the darkest substance under the influence of heat and pressure transforms into the strongest, most brilliant rocks. These rocks have the consistency to stem an entire nation. These will be our future leaders. Please meet the Florence Creative Collective I formed with 21 street kids that were orphaned and displaced as a result of the Sierra Leonean Civil War and ended up living in the street as early as age 3, growing up as outlaws of society.
A name Timothy, but my gangster name na Ifim.
My name is Patrick Christian Kago.
My name is Alessandro.
My name is Bangwa.
My name is Samosi.
My name is DMX.
None shall escape the visions that I have seen. No sense best believe.
I lost my mother and father during the Civil War in Sierra Leone. I was brought up by my grandmother in the village.
At the age of 5 years of age, yeah. So this stepmama had it hit me, even put poison for me, and I chop for it.
In Jesus' name I pray, amen. This name is stronger than my life.
How do I remind the whole family on this? Yes, I'm not the first man who begin lockdown base. Three other gangster the Kaisai now base. And now base is it now. The team. All man, fearful of the team.
The visions that I see.
You get the hard way, you get the soft way. The soft way, not for good thief. The hard way now for good tooth, not of God, the tooth for people, or it will do tea for people.
If you're not strong on the streets, you go die before time, or either you come up bad before time.
Yes. 2001, when I come on the streets, I did that, they do them bad, they thief, they joke phone, or they do all them bad life. Till 2010, I'm okay, shoot my lens.
From the street, he take me to school and go put me in school. I did live fine now. Then, my own thing what I want to do in the future, I want to study law. I get that determination they always. So, I want to become a lawyer, my future than my future than the.
My future plan. See what they able to do for help me own family. Because I don't decide say I want to go to school for be international businessman.
So me some of me can't be the way they live their way what life they are. I wish them I go change like me. For let them go they left their style ya. Let them imagine say all them off style ya not fine for mortal man. Mortal man a more possible for the reason and wish for better future in this world.
Thank you.
These guys are my biggest inspiration. Destiny brought us together. I met them by a chance encounter in 2010. 2011, they all started living with me, 21 in number. Wonderful things happen when creatives meet with mutual respect. How did we go about it? Creativity. That same creativity that ensured their survival under the most adverse circumstances in the streets is channeled into outlets such as art, music, film, and fashion. They made the impossible possible. From Lion Base in Sierra Leone to luxury fashion stores in Paris, New York, and Berlin. This is what we created single-handedly, without a single cent in donations, without running water, without electricity. Most of them not being able to read and write at the time when I met them. And now, some of them studying law, engineering, being filmmakers, and so on. This is made with pure energy, inspiration, and love in Freetown. With creativity and passion as the sole ingredient, we participate in a global market of international competition and find our way into the world's most exclusive department stores, onto the bodies of the world's fashion icons, and into the most distinguished art collections and exhibitions in Berlin, Paris, New York, Miami. A proven concept that produced self-sufficient individuals financing their own education into lawyers, engineers, filmmakers, and artists within only 3 years. Concept based on mutual respect and sharing, a blueprint that can be replicated anywhere under any circumstances. I only had the vision and the insight to recognize diamonds in the rough and was determined to prove to the world that the absence of donation produces quality in a self-sufficient manner. I believe charity merely creates inferiority and dependency. I want to serve as a bridge between two worlds I call home, to facilitate a fair exchange between two contrasting worlds that become powerful once balance is reinstalled. It's not about charity, it's about charity. Today I invite you to change your perspective, own your visions of a brighter world. Never see lack, see abundance, always, everywhere. And watch the universe conspire. Don't focus on problems, but on the solution. Remember, our perception of any given situation is the only thing that determines the outcome. I am a lens. I am German, too. Change your channel. Vielen Dank für Ihre Aufmerksamkeit. Thank you for listening.
Love that sister. I love her spirit. I love her tenacity. She's unabashed, unafraid. She's courageous. She said, you come with this damn paper money to take our diamonds and gold and riches. You should come with an open heart. Man. Brothers and sisters, I'm going to take a break. We come back from the break, we'll talk more about how Africa's being exploited and our awareness of it, but more importantly, what we can do. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was the soulful sound of Grover Washington, Mr. Magic. As I was listening, I was thinking, you know, when that came out in the 70s, early 70s. Yeah, I know. I play a lot of music from the 70s. 70s, if you ask your parents or you ask somebody who's 50, 60 years or older, they'll tell you the 70s was the best music of our people. I mean, I say that unabashedly, you know. Time for an Awakening media lineup. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening. Of course, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 to 1. This evening, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, followed by Black Therapy Central from 8 to 9, then Conversation Reparations from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, After 7 with Shawnee B. And on Fridays at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with LaWanda Chambers, then followed later from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council with Brother Alfonso Watkins. And then on Sunday from 7 to 9, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. You know, I like that piece with Melance. I usually played a shorter version, but I wanted to play the longer version because of the work that she did with those young men who were destitute, who were on the streets and so forth, and who were out education. And that's just like you said, within that short period of time, what she was able to do because of commitment and dedication and, of course, willing students, focused and willing students. And you can see what can be done. But more importantly, her message, of course, was to the Europeans and how they rip Africa off and how Africa is made destitute by them. The world needs Africa. The world needs Africa. Africa does not need the world. This is Asad Malik, and this was last dated October 13th of 2020. Home truth is defined as an important truth, a key truth, a fundamental truth, a cardinal truth, which is discomforting to acknowledge. The great African writer, Ngugi Thiong'o, drove home the unpalatable truth, a home truth that makes some on both sides of the divide uncomfortable. But truth is the truth. In his book, Decolonizing the Mind, The Politics of Language in African Literature, he wrote, truth does not change because it is uncomfortable. Truth is universal, and no power in heaven, on earth, or under the earth can change the truth. Decolonizing the Mind, The Politics of Language in African Literature. It's a book that you can go get at Amazon Prime or whoever else. In other words, you don't need to travel around the world to know that. The truth is the truth everywhere. But we are living in a world where the truth has been turned upside down and labeled fake news or alternate facts, alternative facts. Some of us refuse to accept this distortion of the truth. We know the reality is that without the benevolence of Africa and the massive contributions from Africans, Europe and America wouldn't be where they are today. Fact. The truth. The truth must be told, and Africans must begin to stand up for the truth. Far too long, Africans have been allowed themselves to be bamboozled and led astray by the Western tales. More often than not,
we have been told that without Europeans and American charity, you know, Oxfam, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, and other nefarious Western institutions, Africa and Africans everywhere would cease to exist. The opposite is true. The world needs Africa. Africa does not need the world. In his work, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, Walter Rodney captured the European psychosis unabashedly and ambiguously, clearly to be understood by both the learned and the unlearned. I wish this book was made available to every African. How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. Western topsy-turvy philosophy has succeeded in placing limitations on the African capacity. So far as Africa is hooked to the Western topsy-turvy philosophy, it is impossible for Africa to develop and break forth from the self-imposed misery and underdevelopment. The Western topsy-turvy relationship with Africa is mainly a slant. The facts is made mainly to slant the facts in order to justify the siphoning of wealth from Africa to enrich Europe. Today, other nations are taking a page from the Western playbook to enrich themselves while taking advantage of the wealthiest continent on the planet. You know, that's why I am so adamant. That's why, I mean, just because the African continent is the wealthiest continent on the planet with unlimited resources, with the ability to feed itself, literally to feed the world, with the ability to educate, with the ability to build and grow. I mean, everything is right there, but yet the vast majority of Africans to this day, right at this moment, want to get out of, they want to come to the West, particularly to America, Europe, other places. But when they go there, they realize we have no friends. We have no friends. You want a friend? As Dr. John Henry Clark used to say, you want a friend? Go look in the mirror. And don't leave that mirror till you like what you see. Not that you like your cleft chin or dimples in your cheek or your arched eyebrows or your keen nose. No. Like who you see historically. Like who you see culturally. Begin to love yourself and then love each other. We have no friends. Another read within here is out how China is colonizing Africa using trade, aid, and death trap diplomacy. They build something they know you probably can't pay. They take it over like they did in Zambia, took over the airport. They have built a couple of security forces. And, of course, they're big in Ghana. I saw them. In fact, in Nigeria, they have Chinese restaurants that even Nigerians can't go to. How about that? They're forbidden to go to them in their own country. We need to know is an information mechanism to counter the false narratives imposed on African Africans. Walter Rodney wrote, the interpretation that underdevelopment is somehow ordained by God is emphasized because of the racist trend in European scholarship. It is in line with the racist prejudice to say openly or to imply that their countries are more developed because their people are innately superior and that the responsibility for economic backwardness of Africa lies in the genetic backwardness of the culture of Africans. An even bigger problem is that the people of Africa and other parts of the colonized world have gone through a cultural and psychological crises that and have accepted at least partially the European version of things. That means that the African himself has doubts about his capacity to transform and develop his natural environment. With such doubts, he even challenges those of his brothers who say that Africa can and will develop through the efforts of its own people. Ngugu Tayengo nailed the issue down beautifully. He states, the very fact that we have common sense of dictates in the literary practice, in the literature practice of other cultures is being questioned in an African writer is a measure of how far imperialism has distorted the view of African realities. Africa actually enriches Europe, but Africa is made to believe that it needs Europe to rescue it from poverty. Africans' natural and human resources continue to develop Europe and America, but Africa is made to feel grateful for aid from the same quarters that still sit on the backs of the continent. Africa even produces intellectuals who now rationalize this upside-down way of looking at Africa. We who went through the school system were meant to graduate with a hatred of the people and the culture and the values of the language of our daily humiliation and punishment. They have a diagram here of the rape of Africa, setting the record straight, as they say, what goes in and what comes out. 30 billion goes in, but 190 billion goes out of Africa each year in various debt payments, resources, loans to other governments as a result of climate change situations, tax evasion, and other illicit financial flows facilitated through tax havens, illegal logging, in profits made by multinational corporations, $46 billion in profits made. Looking at this thing is just sickening. Converting European resources or natural wealth because we have enough, satisfied with what God has given us and not so acquiescence like Europeans. Europeans wish they had all of Africa, while Africans have nothing. Have zilch. Today, thousands of European firms are operating and making huge profits in Africa, sustaining the European social economy and basically destroying the African environment. Africans never met in darkness to plan the plunder of Europeans like they have. There's absolutely no African multinationals stealing from Europe and underdeveloping Europe like Europeans are doing in Africa. Europeans still meet daily in darkness, just as they did in the Berlin Conference of 1884, 1885, with the African map below, planning how to rob Africa of her God-given wealth. European ownership of African human and natural resources still dominate the African landscape. Africans are often accused of being economic refugees, escaping poor African in search of a greener pasture in Europe and America, when in fact they are just following and seeking ways to retrieve some of their own stolen treasures. Even European leaders are telling the truth about Africa. Addressing 30 African heads of state attending the 25th France and African Summit on May 31st of 2010 in Nice, France, then President Sarkozy of France said that Europe and Africa are inexplicably linked, and highlighted the indispensability of Africa in resolving the major issues currently facing the world. Africa is our future. For a long time on the periphery, the African continent is asserting itself more and more as a major player in international life. France and Europe need Africa as much Africa needs France and Europe. We don't need no damn France, and we sure the hell don't need no damn Europe. We don't need America. We don't need Caucasians at all. All we have to do is purge ourselves from our minds and close ranks and pull our resources and do for ourselves. We can be sovereign. We can be self-determining. We can be independent. We can be liberated. In a speech delivered in African leaders in Kampala, Uganda, on the 24th of July in 2010, former UK Prime Minister made these startling revelations and confirmed what some of us have regarded as the eternal truth. Without Africa, there would be no Europe and global growth. Some people will say that these balances are inevitable, that the world is out of kilter, and there's simply nothing that we can do. But I believe there is an alternative to what is now called the new normalcy in global economics of low growth, high unemployment, and instability on the one hand, high levels of absolute poverty and waste of human lives in Africa, on the other hand. There is an alternative to a decade of low global growth, which would fail to meet both the development needs of Africa and the growth needs of Europe and America. To me, the answer is obvious. We should struggle to find new sources of growth. We must turn here to Africa, to this continent of huge potential and talent. There is an alternative. It is an alternative where Africa grows, thrives, and contributes not only to our own development, but to world recovery. That is the alternative. But it is possible. But is it a possibility rather than a probability? They have a piece here with President of Ghana, Adu, who leaves Macron, the French president, speechless. I'm not going to play that. But you can get this from African Alliance. Got it off of Facebook. And I got a lot of them, and so I'll be dealing with these from time to time. It was after these meetings that the NATO AFRICOM murdering mechanisms was set in motion to clear a major impediment to Western imprudence, Muammar Gaddafi. The mourning of Muammar Gaddafi, the lynching of a Pan-African hero. With Gaddafi out of the picture, that's why I keep saying to you, that's why I hate Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. I hate the Clintons. I know hate is a strong word, but that's how strong it is to me, too. I hate their ass. The blood of Muammar Gaddafi is on the hands of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and the European countries, particularly the France and England. Particularly. There was a chance for African to have a currency, for African to begin to develop itself, for African to really begin to develop Pan-Africanism. And that's what happened. With Gaddafi out of the picture, the stage was set for the West to once again embark on the reckless plunder to Africa to feed its ferocious appetite. Africa can forget the current fickleness leaders. With Gaddafi gone, in the words of our ancestor, Robert Mugabe, the current crop of leaders was quite different from the revolutionaries who fought for African independence. We go and kneel before Sarkozy. You go and kneel before David Cameron, who was the British prime minister. Kneel before Obama and say, yes, we shall do all you want us to do. All these leaders. And when you are kneeling, you are making your nation kneel before these young imperialists. Pan-Africanist Zimbabwe President Mugabe said Africa was going through its worst period ever. Not only have they become cowards, but have become sellouts of our own people, betraying the nations of Africa. Africa simply needs the Nkrumah type. And a new generation of revolutionary leaders to reverse the current Western distortions. Today, Africa is reeling under Western economic dictatorships and massive dose of historical distortions. Our supreme case, as expressed by Kwame Nkrumah. Until the independent states of Africa are united in a single nation, the exploitation of Africa will never end. I repeat, until independent nations of Africa are united in a single Pan-African nation, the exploitation of Africa will never end. That's why all these Pan-African groups, the Pan-African Alliance who put this out, the Pan-African Federalist Movement, the Pan-African Socialist Party, all of these groups got to come together. We have to come together, each one doing his thing and, you know, saying, well, we're not a monolith. Hell with that. We must develop to be a monolith, to think in a way that is independent, self-determining, liberating, and sovereign for the benefit of our future. Although most Africans are poor in currency, our continent is potentially extremely rich. Our mineral resources,
with our being exploited with foreign capital only to enrich foreign investors. Range from gold and diamonds to uranium and plutonium and petroleum. Our forests contain some of the finest woods to be grown anywhere. Mahogany, teak, you name it. Our cash crop includes cocoa, coffee, rubber, tobacco, and cotton. As for power, when I just read that piece, it reminded me of Belgium. I hate Belgium. I hate everything. But no, Belgium was, controlled by under the leadership of Leopold, King Leopold, when they entered into the Congo. And the Congo, geographically, is right in the middle. And it's ironic that the Congo is the richest country on the continent in terms of mineral resources. And, of course, whatever they were dealing with, whether it be rubber, whether it be diamonds, whether it be gold, whatever it was, if the Africans did not produce, they'd cut their hands off. If the men did not produce, they would cut their wives and their children's hands off or feet off. In fact, in Belgium, they used to sell chocolate hands. The Europeans have, taken, just like I said, when I'm sitting in a cocoa farm in Ghana, realizing that we don't produce nothing in Africa. When I see those brothers and sisters on the streets selling chocolates and selling, they're produced, the raw materials taken out of Africa, sent to Europe, produced there, and then sold back to us on the continent. Although most Africans are poor in currency, our cash crop includes cocoa, coffee, rubber, tobacco, and cotton. As for power, which is an important factor in any economic development, Africa contains over 40% of the potential water power of the world. 40%, as compared with about 10% in Europe and 13% in North America. Yes, so far, less than 1% has been developed. This is one of the reasons why we have in Africa a paradox of poverty in the midst of plenty, the scarcity in the midst of abundance. Let me read that again. This is one of the reasons why we have in Africa the paradox of poverty in the midst of plenty and scarcity in the midst of abundance. Never before have a people have been within their grasp so great an opportunity to developing a continent endowed with so much wealth. Individually, the independent states of Africa, some of them potentially rich, others poor, can do little for their people. The bottom line is, what we're talking about is that if Ghana needs help, Nigeria will help them. If Nigeria needs help, Sierra Leone will help them. Cote d'Ivoire will help them. We will help each other. Together, by mutual help, they can achieve much. But economic development of the continent must be planned and pursued as a whole. A loose confederation designed only for economic cooperation would not provide the necessary unity of purpose. Only a strong political union can bring about the full and effective development of our natural resources for the benefit of all our people on the continent. The evidence that Africa throughout history had built, sustained, and provided the impetus for Western development is overwhelming. Let us not allow them to continue with this twisting enough already. Most Africans have been conditioned to accept this distorted reality. Let us reject the arrogance and ignorance of the West. Without Africa, there would be no France or no Europe or America. We must surely get rid of this unholy falsehood, which has been deeply implanted into the inner recesses of our brains, that Africans' survival depends on Western benevolence. Pan-African ideals should be forcefully expressed to correct the continued rape of our continent
and overthrow the dangerously entrenched European belief systems, their theology, their methodology, everything. Reject it. Only the undiluted truth shall set Africa and Africans free. Ashe. Let's talk more, brothers and sisters. Give me a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. This is, you know, I know some of us, because we've been here so long, and many of us have said this is just as much ours as it is theirs, and we help build it. And so we should share in it. Brothers and sisters, number one, you will never, as long as they're living, I don't give a damn how many more people you have than they have. I don't give a damn how many who said that from a population standpoint, because they are dying off around the world, that sooner or later that we'll become the majority. I don't mean a damn thing. There are many places where Caucasians are not the majority, but they are what? Still in what? Control. And that's what would be here. It doesn't make any damn difference. The problem is them. The problem is the European. I read to you in the Essayism about warriorhood, about it doesn't make any difference. We are at war. We have been warred upon. We have been, by the European place for our extermination, our elimination. This is a reality, unfortunately, for us. And yet, we keep begging. We keep hoping. We keep crying. This has been a damn shame, all these Negroes crying this weekend. Crying. Because they so, I'm glad Trump gone. Oh, Lord, thank you, Lord. Now Biden going to be in and he's going to be good. He's going to be good for us. There's another piece I want to read probably next day. That piece I'm going to read next day that shows and tells us our condition has not changed. We are still in the same situation. And it will never change. We have been designated. You know what designated means, right? We've been designated as a permanent underclass in Western society, particularly here in America. Oh, there's a few of us who would achieve something here and there. There's the idea that some of us are doing fine and doing well. I ain't talking about the few of us. I talk about the majority of us. I talk about the whole of us. See, America's about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what America espouses, individualism. I remember advocating on behalf of us as firefighters. Getting on the job. That was, of course, our organization. That's what we're about. Getting on the job, staying on the job, getting promoted on the job and so forth. You know, and this Caucasian said, you should be happy you got a job. Don't worry about nobody. You just should be happy you got a job. Who you think you are? Martin Luther King? I was president of the Black Firefighters Association. And to me, our main objective was to make sure that we have more brothers and sisters on the job. Because number one, the damn fire department is the public works job. Taxes of the citizens pay for that service. And if you got a citizenry that is like 30, 40, 50% of the population, damn it, you should have at least half the people damn near who represent that community on the damn job. But today, across this damn country, fire departments, now, because after the elimination of affirmative action, which made fire departments hire people from that city who look like me, you and me, now they've retired, like myself, and moved on. But the hiring, once they eliminated affirmative action, reverted back to the 50s and 60s. And so today, fire departments in a city that may be 30, 40, 50% us is 90% Caucasian male.
Why shouldn't it be?
Oh, what's up, Jay?
Oh, dude, you didn't have me on mute? Oh,
no, I sure didn't.
Oh, my man.
And I usually do that, too, because first when somebody comes on, I mute them right away, but I just missed you on that one, Jay.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, though. But, yeah, matter of fact, why shouldn't it be? You know, I had to call in once I heard you start saying about the Negro crying and jumping up and down and partying and all that, man. Yeah,
it was
triggered
sickening.
Me. Because it's just pathetic, man.
It's sickening.
It's that the Negro is insane. You're just talking about what's going on in Africa, how we being mistreated, used and abused, robbed and everything. And Negroes over here getting treated basically the same way, but they happier because they got them a new white man.
Yeah.
To oversee them with a fake black woman or whatever you want to refer to her as being the new Miss Anne or whatever.
You know, I think one thing about Kamala Harris, aside from her name, Kamala Harris, you know. Now, you know, I know that, you know, she could have been a different name. But one of the things, she looks black. She looks white at times, but she looks like she African, you know. And so I don't think that she would have been able to pass. I've seen American African women who could pass to be Caucasians, like many probably did way back. In fact, there was a dude whose father was American African on the fire department in Milwaukee, and he passed. Well, not really. Because of affirmative action, he took advantage of his Africanness. So did his brother.
When it was necessary.
Yeah, so did his brother. But he identifies as being Caucasian. He married Caucasian, so did his brother, you know. And so their children will be looking more Caucasian, even though his father is an American African. And let me tell you what was interesting, Jay. I met his sister at Kwanzaa. She identifies with being African. She had a big fro, of course. Like, he said, oh, you're a firefighter. You must know my brother, you know. I said, who's your brother? And so when she said his name, she said, oh, undercover brother. I should call him undercover brother.
That's what she called him?
No, that's what I called him, undercover brother. But no, she.
Oh, undercover brother.
Yeah.
All right.
So he called him undercover brother, you know, because he was always, you know, he identified with being Caucasian. But when you look at his employment, you know, he came on as a quote minority. Because at that time, affirmative action was happening. And there were a number of Caucasians claiming to be Latino. There was an Italian dude who said he was Latino, you know, to come under affirmative action.
Did you ever check him out?
Huh?
Did you ever check him for playing the games that he was playing with his Africanness?
Oh, yeah. I used to mess with him all the time.
Okay.
Oh,
cool.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
Yeah, because he worked in the same.
Up on him every day.
Yeah, he worked in the same fire. I mean, he didn't work on the same shift, but he worked in the same firehouse I worked in. You know.
Oh, he got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So
and his sister did it. So his sister know that he was faking the funk, but
right.
She wasn't going along with it.
Exactly.
Whoa. You know? Whoa.
Yeah, see, like I said, I met
single,
her.
If I was single, I'd have backed her and brought her around, man.
Well, she even.
Or this gift and toyed with him. Oh,
she even.
I had a Negro like that at one job that I was working in. And I must say, I abused the poor man every chance I could get. I after a while, it just wasn't no more fun, but it had to be done. Because he was the worst type of bootlicker you could ever be associated with, because in a sense he knew better.
Yeah.
But he just wanted that position and that status. And you know, when you talk about Kamala Harris and all of this is what I take issue with her is. Regardless of whatever how issues are with a father, you're supposed to respect your father. As an African, that's just something that you don't do. How could you be in all these places and positions and not acknowledge your father, who's not no poopa? If you know anything about her daddy is one of the top black economists in the United States. He's matter of fact, he gotta be a heavyweight, let's call it what it is, if he on the staff of Stanford University. Most of the professors on the staff of Stanford, they kind of heavyweights at what they do. You know what I mean? They way up there in academia, and their work is known. Now, here it is. She don't even acknowledge her daddy. I don't respect no woman like that. But you got Negroes who say, well, your daddy wasn't really in her life, and daddy this and that. You don't have to go into nothing big about your father if you choose not to, but at least have the decency and the respect to acknowledge him.
Yeah, well, I understand that. I mean,
you know, because the only time it seems to me that she was messing with black men was, I guess, when she wanted some black Johnson and she wanted to elevate herself
to a certain position.
Because Willie Brown,
right.
You know, yeah. Old Willie Brown, he was, I guess, still a little bit young and strong enough. I didn't know if Viagra was out at the time to, I guess, put in a little bit of work to be able to be smitten enough with it to do all the things he did for. But she don't even talk about Willie Brown. From what I heard, she don't even want to be acknowledged as being his side piece.
Well, of course not. Not at the time that she achieved her positions, no. And then, of course, marrying the European Jew, no. You know,
a Jew.
Yeah, I'm European Jew. Yeah, European Jew.
Let's say the word together, all a Jew. So she could have.
Well, I mean, you know what though, Jay? You know what, Jay? You know, the only thing that is the issue with that is that people don't say a Catholic. They don't say, oh man, a Baptist.
A Jew.
They say a Jew, and because of the stature, because of the stature and the imposition of European Jews on the world. Because the people who dominate and control Judaism are not Hebrews of ancient time. They ain't the people of the book. Okay? These are some late converts to Judaism. They're the Ashkenazis. They are European Jews. So, but who control a lot more so than any other group on the planet in terms of their numbers. And they're controlling interests in various aspects that are very vital, you know, economy, entertainment, a lot of, you know, so
now
far beyond
out,
their numbers.
Check this out. I just had to check a brother from the UK who was on talking about what England is supposedly giving to the blacks because of the coronavirus. I don't know how true it is. Paul may know. About, you know, he's saying they get money and stuff like that. But I had to say to him this. You know, they damn well need to give you money with the queen being the richest person on the planet and all the money that they done stole and all the money that they get. They, England need to give you a black behind something. If the truth be told, she's the richest person on the planet, the queen, but nobody talks about that. So when you put it all in the context, just like America should do certain things if they want to improve this country with the wealth that they have. At this present time, if Biden was smart, what he would do is he would give every American person, if he was smart, this would really be a game changer and really help the economy. If he was smart, he would give up every American person that makes under $50,000 that is affected by this pandemic, $2,000 a month, to be able to help not only themselves, but the pandemic. Because you know the one thing nobody's talking about, Oshie, is the absolute struggles that individuals and families are having with feeding themselves and paying their rent.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're talking about it. Oh, I'm telling you, you know, I'm telling you, I see so many people struggling. I mean, I look at the lines on the food bank. I look at the lines, you know, just totally. And then on top of that, the food prices are increasing and all of this stuff. But nobody's talking about that. So, I mean, Biden could really, really solidify his position in this office real quick if you do something like that. But you know something? Oh, and listen to what I'm saying to you. Please listen. White folks would fight as hard as hell against it because they would think it would be a form of socialism. The dumb bastards.
Yeah.
Seriously, they would fight tooth and nail and say no, 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 no.
Especially those especially those who do have, they would for sure. Because even those who don't have, some of those would as well. But there are many of them give less than a damn. Hold on, Jay. Some of them would give less than a damn of what you call it, as long as I'm receiving some aid that is so desperately needed at this time. And $2,000 in a month ain't about nothing. We all know that. But what did we get the last time? 1,200. But of course there was a scale there. So if you had children and if you had some other issue, you got more and more. But still, it still only panned out to about $2,000 one time. And when was that? That was back in what? July?
Yeah, July.
Yeah.
Almost 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But I mean, just think about Kentucky. Prime example. White trash. Boogaloo white trash. Dog doodle, scorch of the earth, white trash, and they elect back into office.
I know Mitch McConnell. That just bothered the hell out of me.
White folks in South Carolina that put back Lindsey Graham, the undercover homosexual Lindsey Graham. Yeah. Yes, Lindsey Graham is a gay boy. He liked to bend over and put on dresses like Howard Hoover. You know what I mean? So cut it out. Yeah, that's what he is. But the point is, white folks do more harm to themselves because of their hatred of African people when they really have no reason to hate us because 99% of us love the cracker more than they love the damn self.
Well, that's it, Jay. They hate us because they ain't us. And therefore, they made us hate ourselves to the point of defacing ourselves, doing all kind of crazy things. Our minds are so messed up. When we look in the mirror and see ourselves, we hate our nose. We hate our chin. We hate our hair, you know, and causing us to look at each other in that distasteful, evil, and ugly way. And therefore, it's very hard for us because of this self-hatred that has been so deeply ingrained. It's hard for us to come together, to love one another, to trust one another, to believe in one another, to work together, to get our ass up out of this madness. So we continue on in this insanity.
I remember when I was first dating my old lady. And her daughter was around, I think, 11, 12 years old. And she wanted to put a perm in her daughter's head. I had to go through 2 hours of convincing this woman that your daughter should not try to become an artificial white woman at 11, 12 years old. It almost ruined the relationship, man. Thank God she was smart enough to understand what I was trying to say. thank you, Amos Wilson,
I hear you,
for helping assist me in that thing. And to this day, her daughter wears her hair natural.
Right on.
I'm so grateful for it. But that's the type of psychological thing that we are dealing with. And now you got a pathology about to come into play that this old white man and this whatever is the savior of black folks. And in the process, we not going to get nothing.
Well,
we not going to get nothing. Well, I want to know. I mean, if you look at what he's saying, he's going to do in his first 100 days, he's talking about removing the bans on Muslims. He's talking about dealing with the corona. He's talking about the Paris Accord. And he's talking about giving the Baba Louie its right to stay in this country. He ain't said a damn thing about the people who basically are responsible for placing them in office. So that should tell you something right there. But now the flip side is, now let's be clear, Oshie. Let's be clear. What are black folks looking for? Because I'm saying to you, the Negro don't even know what he's looking for. He don't even have an idea on what he should get.
Well, because of our lack of inability to be, collective, to be unified, we're all over the place in a situation. So therefore, somebody can easily take advantage of our situation or deny us anything because, hey, there's no cohesion amongst these people.
We don't do what the hell we want to do.
Exactly.
That's what they're going to do. They just happy they got a new master who's kinder and not as belligerent as the last one was.
Yeah.
But if you were to ask 5 of these so-called Negroes, the head Negroes in charge, the gatekeepers, to put together 5 things. Matter of fact, I'll make it easier for them. Put together 3 things. I guarantee you the bastards couldn't come in agreement. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The only thing, and I know Pearl's daddy is happy as hell because now he'll be able to.
Oh, yeah, he's back in the White House. Yeah, he get a chance to go back into the White House again.
You know what I mean?
Him and Jesse.
I hear long field.
Yeah, him
and I can't listen to him. I can't tolerate him.
No, I haven't heard. I haven't heard Al Sharpton in months, man. I haven't heard him in months. And usually I listen to him when I'm in my.
Hey, listen. He the only Negro that I know of that's on some form of media 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Carl Russell ain't even on 7 days a week.
Yes, he is.
I mean, he's on, think about it. He's on either TV.
Yep, or the radio.
Or radio 7 days a week.
Yeah.
He got a radio show 6 days a week.
Yeah.
A television show 2 days a week. So we just inundated with that damn Negro. For what? So now what we going to do? We going to start marching again? We going to march to the White House
Make
our feet hurt?
Well, you know, he did that. He did that with very little success in the anniversary of the March on Washington. He did that.
I didn't even.
Back in August. Was it August 23rd?
It wasn't as slamming as he made it
to
make it.
That march was basically in response to police brutality because that was pretty much the focus. He had the families of those who had been killed and, you know, say her name, say his name. You know, George Floyd, that kind of thing. So that
sounds like a Beyonce song to me.
Right.
But look, you gotta go.
Gotta go, man.
You gotta go. That's the time.
All right, dear brother.
We were just rocking and rolling. Talk to you soon.
Have a good day. Hotep Jay, have a good day. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate you listening. And of course, my whole focus is trying to make us understand how important it is that we as African people here in this country, here in the United States, here in America, have a right to help liberate Africa as well. That's right. We do. In fact, those of us here who many of us have expertise and wherewithal should do what we can to help liberate Africa. Africa is our salvation. Africa is where we must be. Our situation here is tenuous at best. And we live amongst the people who can't stand our ass, who who wish we would disappear. You've seen that election. 70 million people voted for Donald Trump. Can you believe that shit? 70 million. 74 million voted for Biden. But still, brothers and sisters, we end this program like with all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources everybody wants. Think they can't do it out, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivihore. Bivihore means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family.